Welcome to the January 8th Mesa City Council study session. I'm Mayor Giles, conducting the meeting. I think I have the lingering effects of a holiday cold in my voice, so no cause for concern. I think me and everybody else is probably fighting to be healthy right now. The first item on our agenda is to review the January 12th council meeting agenda. So let's move to that document. Currently, there is nothing off the consent agenda, but I don't know that that's going to remain the case. So let's look at page 2, page 3, page 4. Page 5, page 6, these are all purchasing items, page 7, if I'm going too fast, let me know, page 8.
Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Brady.
On page 8, staff would like to give a little briefing on item 6A, and I also think we probably, Mike, should do a little brief on 5C. Would that, we can do that whenever council's ready, but we'd like to give a little background on those two.
Yeah,
great.
Before,
and then at 5B.
Take 5B off consent.
Okay.
Do you want to have any discussion on 5B at this point, Mr.
No, Richards? I mean, we went through it quite a bit at the committee meeting, and you know, it's just, still have some reservations about going
okay.
that direction.
So 5B is off the consent agenda. Is there any, just for those watching at home or in the audience, this has to do with the Gateway loan cancellation. Any other comments on that item? So that'll be off the consent. 5C, was that the one, Mr. Brady?
Yes, let's have Mike and Larry given if they can come
okay.
up real quick.
Thank you, Mike and Larry. What do we need to know about the providing issuance and ordering the sale of the City of Mesa and Highway User Revenue, I'm sorry I started reading this, Revenue Refunding Bonds.
Good morning, Mayor.
Thank you.
Today, we'd just like to bring upon you the resolution for the highway refunding of a Highway User Revenue Bond. We've identified an opportunity in the market where we have the ability to, because of market rates, we have the ability to refund approximately $18 million of bonds. We've estimated that savings to be around $700,000, and that's all dependent on, you know, market rates at the time we priced the bonds in a couple weeks. So it's a pretty good, you know, it's a good news that we're able to save money for the HERF fund.
Great. I know we had a similar presentation, it seems like just about a month ago, where
yeah.
we did the same thing and saved almost or maybe a slightly more money. So this
yeah.
is great news.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
We're experiencing, you know, as you know, market volatility in equities market. So we see the rates going down for bonds and whatnot. And so we're trying to look at every chance we get to do refunding.
Yeah, great. Just to bring to your attention, we also want to just appreciate Larry looking out for these opportunities and timing
right.
it up for the market. So,
and Mayor and Council, I just wanted to mention that Mike mentioned, you know, what's going on in the bond market right now. Rates are all over the place, and this gives us the ability to do this deal. But there's no guarantees. And as long as the Treasury market stays where it's at, we could save more than what Mike's talking about. But we want to be conservative when we present it to you guys. So hopefully everything will go well.
Yeah, we have an internal metric of 3%, at least 3% savings. So if it goes below that, we're not going to do the deal. But, you know, we hope for higher than that.
Okay. Thank you.
So when you say there's no guarantees, because we're going to do this like a few days from now.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, several weeks actually.
Several weeks.
First or so. Week in March,
yeah.
Mayor.
It gives the opportunity for Larry to put the package together, the paperwork together to get that ready to go to the market. And then they'll have to see what the market's actually telling them at the time before
right.
they pull the trigger. So
we'll get up at the first week of March and check the rates again, and hopefully they're similar
yeah.
or the same or better than they are now.
Yeah. And it's actually going to be the first week of February.
Oh, great. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Well, we'll calendar that. Thank you. Next item, 6A.
A and B.
A and B are
yes.
related
yes.
items.
They go together.
Yes.
So we have Christine and Laura will come forward.
Thank you.
This is relates to an ordinance the council worked on How long did we decide it was? 5 years ago?
About 4 years ago.
And so this is just a tweaking of that, but I wanted council, this council, to be aware of what we're proposing to do.
Good morning, council, mayor.
Good morning.
I'm Christine Zalanka with the Development and Sustainability Department. This is Laura Heineman. She's our deputy director over code enforcement, and this is Sam from the city prosecutor's office and the city attorney's office. This is just a strengthening of the enforcement provisions of the residential rental inspection program. This is part of Title VIII, which is the nuisance code, which allows code officers, upon written consent from either a tenant or a landlord, to inspect the interior of a rental unit, and if there are unsafe conditions, this simply strengthens our ability and clarifies our enforcement ability to force improvement of unsafe conditions. There's no expansion of the program. It's the same program, just simply the strengthening of the enforcement provisions.
Great. And I was interested when I read this because to me it looks like what we're doing is expanding the definition of owner to include also other legal entity recognized by the state of Arizona. Is there more to it than that?
That's basically it. One of the challenges that we have when we have vacant landlords or trying to find responsible parties for a tenant who's being forced to live in unsafe conditions is to find someone who we can actually hold responsible for making those improvements.
Okay. And these investment properties are often owned by LLCs, and they have statutory agents, and we just wanted to make sure that we could cover that person that was responsible for taking care of the property.
Right. So just before you move on, then owner, I get.
Right.
Other legal, what would be an example of an other legal entity recognized by the state of Arizona that we would cite other than the owner?
A limited liability, the statutory agent of a limited liability corporation, an LLC.
Okay, but the LLC would be the owner. So
correct.
It's the, I'm not understanding the need to broaden the definition of owner if we're still really just citing the owner.
When this issue came up, what we were really trying to do was more directly connect the responsibility for the violations to the person that was involved. And anytime an attorney looks at a code, they want to make sure that it's as clear as possible. So we really weren't going in there to expand the definition of what an owner meant, but the city attorney recommended that we add that to the definition of owner.
Okay. And I support this, but again, I'm as an attorney who's done some landlord-tenant law, I'm just trying to wrap my brain around what's the difference between if an LLC owns the property, they meet the definition of owner, and I support this. I'm just trying to figure out why I support this.
Yeah, Mayor and Council, I think the intent was to address some of the issues that was occurring over in municipal court, but Samantha, why don't you go ahead and explain or answer the mayor's question, please.
Good morning, Council, Mayor. Mm. Part of the problem that we've been having in Mesa Municipal Court is some of our judges, our magistrates, are not quite understanding in order to have the civil enforcement become a habitual offender after 3 civil citations. And so in order to criminalize or actually have cases and criminalize some of these people that are having these issues and it's habitually happening 3 or more times, we had to expand the definition of owner to include, because a lot of people are out of state in California coming into Mesa buying things, and we're not able to just find exactly who they are, how to get them. And so we're just trying to make sure as prosecutors that the right person is charged, that the right person, and that's one of the reasons why we expanded the definition of an owner. And we were finding it had to do more with the LLCs and the statutory agents, and sometimes the people on the LLCs weren't necessarily the statutory agents, and they were using shell corporations and things like that.
Okay, I get that. Yes, you bet. Please, Mr. Fender.
So in other words, the management company, statutory agent, those individuals can expect to be cited by the city of Mesa criminally if a property that they're managing within the city of Mesa has turned to an habitual status, then instead of trying to chase down an LLC or a REIT out of California or something like that, you're going to go after, it'll be a real estate agent or a property management company, something like that. Is that the tool you're asking for?
No, not necessarily. We will continue to go after the person that officially owns that property. So a management company is certainly somebody that we work with when we're trying to get these issues resolved, but the ultimate responsibility is the owner of the property.
And I'm obviously no attorney, but statutory agent for an owner, wouldn't that be one of those people I just described? Or so you're not going after those folks then, or you are? I don't know.
Go ahead.
Can I tell you, I think Mr. Fender is correct, frankly. I think you'd never convict a statutory agent. That statutory agent just receives service of process for the... But you would, I think, possibly convict a property management company if they're responsible for maintaining the property. So I think, to me, that's why this makes sense, is you'd be going after the property manager, right, in addition to the owner.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Typically, under other types of laws, I'm not an attorney, you know, it's owner or operator. So bringing in the management company, they're the operator of the facility. So it gives us a more direct link.
Let's you cast a broader net to get some enforcement. So,
yeah, and again, just to clarify on the criminal side of it, you have to be a 3 times habitual offender under the nuisance code, which is civil, before it bumps up into criminal. So, you know, we always try really hard to get voluntary compliance before we ever have to move to criminal. But we are finding that we've got a few bad actors out there that it's become very difficult to really bring these rental properties into a livable condition. And we feel this is another tool to help us do that.
So in other words, we're going after the slum lords. We're not going after the person that may have had an incident or a challenge, and the individuals that have these run-down, terrible properties that we get hounded at the city council office and then wonder why they say, hey, why have we never done anything, or how come they're not a habitual? So this is a tool you're asking for, and I support that portion. I just didn't want it to be lost in somebody's rhetoric or something. The idea is the slum lord that's running Mesa down, you just want a tool to be able to enable the judges to look at the situation and pass, you know, whatever justice that they need. And it, just to follow up, remember when we talked years ago, it seems, if I could, Mayor.
Please.
with regard to residential government inspectors going into people's private residences.
Right.
You said administratively you would look at procedures to make sure there's some check and balance, that there's no, someone just saying, you know what, I think I can come into your house at any time. How's that working? Is that going okay?
The way we initially started that, and then I'll let Laura follow up, in order for us to be invited into a residential rental property, either the tenant or the owner has to sign a piece of paper. And that was exactly what we worked out with council, that we do not have the right to just go in. We have to be invited in. So if there's a tenant that has, you know, severe electrical problems, plumbing problems, whatever, that are unsafe, the tenant must sign a piece of paper inviting us in to look at it.
Great. I think this is a good change, so I support it and appreciate staff's working on it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, we're on page 9 of Monday's agenda. Any other questions on page 9? Page 10, again, these are introduction of zoning ordinances. And page 11. Okay, I think that completes the review of the January 12th council meeting agenda. The next item on the study session agenda, item 2, is regarding job order contracting projects. Are there any questions from council on any pending contracts? If not, the next item would be to hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. We've been gone for quite a while, so I'm sure we've all been doing a lot. The challenge might be remembering what we've done since we were last here.
What party did you go to?
Nothing that exciting. If there is none, we'll move on to the next item, which is scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, we have a Community and Cultural Development Committee meeting following this meeting this morning. Our next council meeting will be Monday, January 12th. Reminder of that. Also, the City Council swearing in will be Tuesday, January 13th at 6 p.m. at the Mesa Arts Center, the Virginia Piper Theater. Obviously, this is swearing in for Vice Mayor Chris Glover, Councilmember Dave Luna, and Councilmember-elect Kevin Thompson. I believe the doors will be opening. The ceremony starts at 6. The doors open at 5:30. So invite everybody to that event. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That'll be a great event. Mr. Thompson.
Since Monday is Scott's last council meeting, can we make a motion to remove everything from consent agenda and go through it one item at a time?
No, we can't. Yeah, let's redo those committee assignments that we were talking about. Thank you. Excellent suggestion, but we'll ignore that suggestion. If there's nothing else on the agenda, then this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.